Well, good evening and welcome. Historical Significance proudly presents Loving Our Longtimers, speaker meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm Brian, I'm an addict, and I have the privilege and honor of serving as your chairperson tonight. Each week we invite speakers to share with their personal knowledge of the origins and early history of NA, many of whom have 30 years or more clean. We are recording these historically significant speakers to better share their experience, strength, and hope with our fellowship. You can download these messages at Historical Significance website, nabyphone.com. That's nabyphone.com. And we welcome a Seventh Tradition donation through PayPal on that website to help support that website. And now let's open this meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the third step prayer, please. Many of us have said, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. This week our speaker is Billy A. from Allentown, Pennsylvania. I've known Billy for quite some time now, and I've seen him, like all the rest of us, up, down, and everything in between, and he's still growing. He's still growing, you know, and there's been times I haven't liked him. There's been times I liked him, and right now I just love him to pieces, and I don't care what anybody says. I still love him. Anyway, without that, after that, I'm just going to give you Billy. Let him tell his own story. Billy?
I'm an addict. My name's Bill. I'm from Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I want to thank Brian for introducing me. I just listened to our tape that we did in Kentucky, Brian. Just a miracle that we're even clean today. Yeah, I think about that because, I got clean in 1979. November the 16th is my clean date, and I've not had to use since. Just the experiences. I'm heading to Florida right now to participate in a literature conference. One of the first fellowship literature conferences that we have had in a long time, and no participatory process. I've been real excited about this journey. And just reflecting back over how I got to where I'm at today. Coming to Narcotics Anonymous. It's been a miracle. I was sharing on that tape about, basically being struggling, near the fellowship at first and not fitting in, making it here to Narcotics Anonymous because I didn't fit in there and getting here and the message was total absence from any mood change stuff in my own chemical. And that's what got me to stay here. It's that there was a program here for me. And when I first got here, when I say there's a program here, the program was here, but it was small on the East Coast of the United States of America at that point in time. There were two meetings in Philadelphia, in the city of Philadelphia, actually. There were no meetings in the city of New York at that point. They were just getting ready to be started. There were very few meetings. I mean, there were pockets of meetings. There was meetings down in Atlanta, Georgia, Marietta area. There was some meetings up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, out in Pittsburgh. But they were far and in between at that point in time. And if you wanted recovery, you had to travel. My home group opened up 1979, so that I belong to today. Think about that, their whole experience. How did we stay clean? unless we're willing to travel. You know, to get an NA meeting a day, and it shares in the book about having to travel, you know, some people 200 miles a day to get to a meeting. You know, there was no meetings close to us. You know, we had to travel to go to meetings if we were just going to go to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I think the excitement happened for me. That first year was just white knuckling it, really not having anyone around with any form of clean time. And my first time I've really heard anyone that of significant clean time became my second sponsor in that NA was Greg P. at the convention. You know, and through that process, you know, meeting Greg and meeting Joe P. from Memphis, Tennessee at that moment, East Coast, he introduced me to the literature movement. Joe gave me a great book and told me to work for Central Dive, motherfucker. You know, and my sponsor. You know, and by getting Joe, he got me involved. He told me I had to go to the next NA function there was. You know, and that function was in Miami Beach, Florida. I was just downloading the sixth World Literature Conference and the World Convention. WCA 11 was in Miami at the Marco Polo Hotel. You know, and all the people I met at the second East Coast when he was handing the grade books out were involved in this literature process. And they were going out to the fifth World Literature Conference in Ohio. You know, and everyone was involved back then with writing this thing we call the basic text. You know, and I think that was the greatest tribute to me staying clean was they asked me and encouraged me to get involved in an open participatorial structure. You know, and they empowered the member and the home groups to get involved. You know, and yeah, that was a miracle for me who, you know, had no hope before that. And all of a sudden people were encouraging me, they were loving me back to life and telling me I was worth something that I could write. You know, and you know, I was also going to a meeting down in Bucks County then. Actually before the Lincoln conference, the Second World League conference, we were writing every Sunday morning I was going down there to a meeting that was right in the steps and got a guy named Bob P. who was on the World Public Information Chair. I told, who was then from Pittsburgh, told a guy named George from Philadelphia, from Bucks County, that they had to get rid of the 12 and 12 from the other fellowship. That was against the traditions. And George said, what should we do, write the steps? And he said, yeah, write the steps. And so I used to go down there to a step writing meeting, and they were writing the steps for the basic text. You know, and I mean, Friday night we start off in Allentown. I'd hit an 8 o'clock meeting, and then I'd drive down to Pebble Hill, which was down in below Dulles, down in Bucks County, and then George would drive back up with me that night, and we hit a Saturday morning meeting in Allentown, and then I'd go down to Yuneville in southeast Bucks County, down near Philadelphia. And to write the steps. You know, and that's how I got involved in actually the literature movement was through that group. And then our home group also donated a little bit of money to the World Literature Committee. And we got the grade book. We were input reviewing the grade book in our home group and sending that input into the World Literature Committee. You know, and so they got me involved. And that was the neatest thing that could ever happen to an addict. I was talking with my sponsor, then Joe Proctor. And our home group at that point in time was my wife, me, and a newcomer. You know, and Joe told us to have a function. I was like, how are we going to have a function, Joe? And he said, just have the function. People will come. You know, and Joe was out at Greg's place, Oregon at that point, out of Eugenia. And Joe said, he'll come. He'll hop on the bus. And he came across the country on the bus to be there because he was one of the speakers for us. And a bunch of people from Pittsburgh came out. We had a girl named Vicky speak at it. And the Bucks County people came up. So we ended up with three addicts in Allentown, ended up with 200-some addicts at our function in Attabomb. weekend adathon that we have. You know, and your college numbers start to grow because of this process. You know, things start to happen for me. You know, personally, I start to get a recovery program. You know, and Joe introduced me to Right Steps. You know, through that process of Right Steps, I start to get a little relief from my life and got a little hope, faith. You know, I drove all over the place. I mean, Joe had me go to Santa Monica to do my fourth step. You know, wanted me to sit on the beach and do my fourth step with the sunset. You know, and experience that there, which was a spiritual event for me, to do my fourth step with my sponsor out there in Santa Monica. You know, and then we stayed for the conference after that. You know, but we went out there, a week early, you know, I did my fourth step, and, then we stayed for the conference, you know, and we hung out a little bit, went down to Mexico, went up, we're staying in Malibu. Someone gave us a house we'll be staying up there, and I got to, spend some valuable time with my sponsor at that point in time, you know, and to benefit my life. And, but the excitement on the whole East Coast, I got involved in the area. I become the chairperson of our first area service body. I was elected when I was in Miami Beach at the World Convention to be the chair of our area. And then we decided to put a bid in for the fourth East Coast Convention. So we went out to Pittsburgh to Robert Morrison, where they had the third East Coast. You know, imagine, the whole East Coast, you'd get 300 people at a convention. I mean, and that was it. We had a little over 500 in WCNA 11 in Miami Beach. You know, and that was, to me, was Narcotics Anonymous. That was it, you know, that you could get to a convention. And by the time we had the fourth East Coast in 1983 at Lehigh University, we had 1,000 people at our banquet. You know, unheard of, you know, to get that many people at a banquet. You know, experience that to be on, to celebrate recovery and experience of sharing our experience, strength, and hope of 1-for-1 NA recovery in that setting. You know, I still remember the addicts coming. You know, and there was a lot of excitement there. You know, I traveled in 84. I went to Chicago to the World Convention. And that's where I first met my friend Grateful Dave. You know, and I remember Dave's Bright Eyes, and I was involved in the World DI Committee at that point. I was actually involved with a bunch of World Committees. I was on the World Literature Committee, World H&I, World Policy, and I was on the World Public Information. I was on the World Convention Committee. And there was a lot of excitement back then. People wanted to contribute, wanted to get involved. And I met Grateful Dave out there in Chicago. He had 30 days clean, and he wanted to get involved. And what was happening at that point in time, the committee structure was shutting down. And if you didn't get elected at the conference to a committee, you were not put on a committee unless the chair appointed you at that point. The only open committee at that point, totally open participatorial committee, was the World Public Information Committee, and I got Grateful Dave involved in that. We held a Public Information Committee down in Ripley in West Virginia. But Dave got involved in it, it's just that excitement of people wanting to contribute back what they were given freely, and my excitement, going through that process, getting people in the area excited, and the area started to outreach, but my home group became an outreach a committee in our home group became an outreach committee, and we started meetings in different counties. We were in Lehigh County. We started meetings in Ravenna County. We started meetings in Bucks County, down in Western Montgomery County, up in Schuylkill County. We supported meetings up in Monroe County, which is up in the Poconos, and we started meetings in Western New Jersey, which was in Phillipsburg, New Jersey. You know, and our home group supported these meetings and got involved and financially supported them, physically supported them, so they could become groups on their own. They became our responsibility to outreach to them to carry a message to them. You know, it's just things happened, and people just wanted to give back what they were given freely. And just thinking about the time periods, the excitement, the energy that was going on, just people that were still clean, the whole core group of people that I was running with back then were involved in the literature movement originally. And I think that was the basic aspect that propelled me to stay clean. That encouraged me. They got me involved. They told me to help out. They said to give back freely what you've been given. Just think about where I came from, what happened to me, and I became a different person. I was a new person. I was not the same person I walked into the door to Narcotics Anonymous as. I was not the same person that I walked in as. And you think about that there, walking in being hopeless, not having any hope at all of any form of ever staying clean, let alone living. You think about that last night we used, the remembrance of that. Mine was walking, planning a suicide, and I didn't know how to plan properly. I still remember that night planning my suicide, and how are you going to do it? I thought about taking my own life. How would I actually commit suicide and keep up my reputation at the same time? And I thought about I cut my wrist, and I knew you didn't cut them across. I knew you had to slice them up and down. And I thought about going sitting in a tub and cut my wrist, dying, and I couldn't see myself dead. I thought about taking pills, and I couldn't see myself dead. I see myself in a hospital bed, and I visualized my running mates, the bikers I ran with, calling me all kinds of names, and that's something I couldn't handle in my life. And I figured this out as I sat there trying to get off, and I could no longer get off. I couldn't get high no more. And I made the decision to die that night. And the only way to die properly was to commit mass murder, to go to the Sierra Bar in Allentown, they called the Friendly Tavern, and take everyone else's life there and die in a battle. And it would not be written as suicide. To be written. Anything but suicide. Not at the front page of the newspaper. A woman called me, and not the account speaks. She asked me,
Billy's fallen off the end of the earth, somewhere down in the flatlands in the south. Apparently he'll call back in soon, we hope. Until then, we can sing. If I take us all off of mute, we can sing "What a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood."
I thought it was me that had fallen off the edge of the earth. So.
Nope. Are we ready to sing, folks?
Mary had a little lamb.
No, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Lynn from Rochester played a microcassette tape for me that she had from the early 80s when she was sitting next to Jimmy Kay at, I think she said it was the Third World Convention. There are 1,800 people there, and they were singing "We Shall Overcome." No, it wasn't that. It was the Impossible Dream. To dream the Impossible Dream. And it was, she played it for me. And that was so, it brought tears to my eyes. 1,800 people saying to strive with unquenchable, whatever the words are. To dream the impossible dream. I'm no singer, as you can tell, but.
Brian,
you do know you're Billy being recorded. Billy, you're back. Hang on just a second and go ahead. Go ahead, Billy.
Where do I get cut off at, Brian?
You were still in talking about Grateful Dave getting involved
okay.
in the service.
Okay, so you missed all the rest of it. All right, because I was talking about Grateful Dave and his involvement in, getting him involved in public information and, the Oak Participatorial, the only Oak Participatorial Committee at that point in time, and just to see a newcomer with 30 Days Clean get involved was reminded me of when they got me involved in the World Literature Committee, that freedom that came from being able to participate, and that was the excitement, in my life, I was involved at that point in time in, like I said, about 5 World Committees. I was involved in World Public Information, World Policy, World Convention, and World H&I Committee. Back then you wore a whole lot of hats. But to watch them shut them committees down, and the only open committee at that point in time was World Public Information for any, where you could take a newcomer with you and get involved like we did with the World Literature Committee in the early days. That anyone could be involved and anyone could give back, really. And that was the excitement in Narcotics Anonymous for me that propelled me into my recovery. I think about that because our home group at that point in time was into outreaching, and we outreached, and started meetings in like 5 or 6 different counties in a county over in the state of New Jersey. And our home group took that responsibility on of carrying them meetings, providing the literature, providing the rent and everything else through our self-supporting until we got that meeting off the ground and formed them into groups. And every time we opened a meeting like that, we took a 3-year commitment to get that meeting off the ground. We were not just going to go there for 6 months or a year. We stayed for 3 years until we got the meeting off the ground until we actually formed them into a group and they can stand on their own 2 feet when they become a group. That stuff there really excited me in recovery. And you think about where I came from, because I didn't identify how I got to Narcotics Anonymous, but the only thing I ever talk about is that last night using, because that's the only night that got me here, was that last night. When I hit that desperation where I no longer want to live, I couldn't continue, I could not survive in a prison cell anymore. 3 months earlier, I was picked up, locked up, for assault, battery, attempt to murder a police officer, and for the next 3 months, I went on a run, and I couldn't get high no more. I couldn't get off no more. No matter how much I put my body, I couldn't get off, and I had feelings. And I became suicidal at the end. I didn't want to live. And, the night before I made it to Narcotics Anonymous was actually November the 7th, was the last night that I put drugs in my body. That morning of the 8th, is when I got a phone call at 2 in the morning. But I had already figured out how to die properly, because I could not kill I couldn't take my own life. So I figured the only way to die properly was to take someone else's life and die in a battle. And I decided to take out a barroom where it was the den of inequity. It was the most unspiritual bar now in South Pennsylvania where everything happened, everything went. And I decided I would go in there and just wipe the whole place out and die in a gun battle. And that would look good to the bike, to my brother bikers that I ran with, the outlaw club I was with, and, make a good front page. And a woman called me that night. Her name was Ann, and asked me, she said I was on her mind for 3 months. But she didn't say 3 months, but she said I've been on her mind every night, and that she read my name in the paper. And I'm not thinking 3 months earlier. I'm thinking about this in the morning, what she had deja vu, And she told me, you're not afraid to die, you're afraid to live. And she wanted 5 minutes of my time. And I gave her that 5 minutes, and that 5 minutes has sprung me into recovery. I don't celebrate on the 8th, I celebrate on the 16th, because it's on the 16th I made the decision to get clean. I really didn't want to get clean when I went to see her. I just didn't want to feel the pain anymore. I did not want to live on this earth any longer, and I wanted the pain to stop. And she talked me into staying in what they call the carriage house. It was not even open yet. It was in the back of a halfway home. And on November the 16th, I made the decision to get clean. And I chose my fellowship was Narcotics Anonymous at that point. And that's how I got to Narcotics Anonymous. And nothing up to that point got me there except that last night using it. You know, like I said, I white-knuckled that first year. I went through all them experiences, got involved heavily. I did everything I could to be involved and be wherever I need to be to stay clean. You know, got involved heavily, and through meeting Grateful Dave, and why is that a monument? Hey, I'm talking. You know, why is that such a monumental meeting of a friend? Because Grateful Dave and me became joined at the hip at that point. He was so excited, wanted to get involved, and then there were things going on in service that were really a struggle at that point in time. The conference was not listening to the groups, you go through the minutes and you can see it. RSR only voting was passed at the conference, and then the chair came back and overruled it and said there was not enough people there, for that to have happened, a quorum. And they had a quorum of the people that were there in the room, and it passed. And he wanted to change this because he said, we missed it by one vote in the quorum. You know, and, they were just upwilling things. And, it just was so monumental at my point, seeing the changing from the open participatorial to a closed structure at that point in time. And it affected me. And then we started to work on It Works How and Why. And, a couple of different things happened. They decided to give people getting involved in it, open participating process, and then it ended up in the closed participating process, and he turned it over to a professional writer. Another thing that happened was the Third District Revised was approved at the conference, and then they also made a motion to edit the basic text for syntax, verbal, things like that there, misspellings, and they ended up giving that to a professional writer. And, and as the book was changed professionally, the fellowship responded and didn't like the changes in what they did with the professional writer. They didn't like the changes. Did not like the changes, okay, in It Works Out Why that was produced professionally. They did not like the changes that they did to our Third Edition Revising Grade the Board without having group approval of the board. They said they printed the board and had Hazleton funded. This all affected, things in Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. And it was an upheaval process. The fellowship demanded its book back, and the conference instead, with the Third District Revised to the 4th to the 5th, the conference made a decision to have a literature conference on the conference floor because Bob Stone got up and said that we can be sued by Hazleton because Hazleton funded the 4th edition printing. We could not go back to Third District Revised, so the conference made a decision to give us a 5th edition instead without listening to the fellowship. And, it's just something that affected, I think, so many people's lives at that point in time, and in our recovery process. We become dissatisfied with the conference, disillusioned what was going on with it, and didn't want to participate any longer. My last conference was 1989, and I went back to the home group. I decided I was not going to be involved. We started posting up basic texts, third edition revised. Our home group was the first home group that printed the basic texts. You know, Grateful Dave and Big Lou come back from the World Conference with me after the 89 conference, after they refused to hear it on the floor to return our basic text to us, the third edition revised. And, our home group already had printed the basic text after the fourth edition fiasco. Already printed the basic text, and we're printing the basic text, and we decided to continue that process. And then we decided to get involved with Grateful Dave's home group, the Big Lou's group in Miami, to figure out how we get this book printed at the cheapest possible price. You know, it's, and the book was printed, and Grateful Dave got a printer in West Virginia to print the book for us. You know, and so we could put the book at $1 a book back then. You know, and the World Service Office went crazy and started sending letters out to every trusted servant in the fellowship to cease and exist about the printing of the basic text, whether you're involved or not involved. And there was a lot of negativity about this here, and people blaming the book as causing controversy. Well, you know, we looked at what was causing controversy was not the book. What was causing controversy is the conference who refused to listen to the fellowship, and we were no longer going to follow the conference decision-making process and not listen to group conscience that we solely came to believe in. You know, and our home group disassociated itself with the service structure at that point in time and have not been involved with the service structure since. You know, and we chose to go alone, as it says in the traditions, that we have the right to stand alone, and if need, kin. And we chose that process that we will stand alone, and we'll print our own literature, and we will get our information out to other groups that they choose to want to follow that path of not being involved in the politics and narcotics anonymous at that level. And, we got disassociated, we got blackballed, we're told we're not narcotics anonymous by the World Service Office, but we stayed clean. You know, we didn't buckle under that type of political pressure. We stayed clean regardless. You know, in Narcotics Anonymous, we did not go to another fellowship. We stayed clean in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. We kept printing our basic texts. And then I found myself disillusioned again and was lost for a period of time, and I was not hearing in Narcotics Anonymous the things I was brought up with. I was not, and I picked up the pre-publication draft of our basic text, which was the Gray Book. And I started studying the Gray Book, and I started hearing them sayings that we're saying throughout the fellowship years before, the things that kept me clean, maintained my recovery, and excited my recovery again. I started reading about total abstinence again. You know, from any mood changing submolar chemical, and I started reading that about, in the first chapter, it already talks about, you know, it's our job to inform these doctors because, you know, we've been misdiagnosed by many of doctors before. And it's our responsibility for our recovery. You know, I started reading about these things, and I was led to believe that this place for me was here for me to be totally absent of any mood change, subminor chemical, Narcotics Anonymous. And I started getting excited again because I started rereading the information that was provided to me through writing of a book. And that was pretty clear with all of us. Our language, our trust in the program, our trust in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, once again. And I stayed, and I got more involved, got excited. In the meantime, I got involved heavily in the wrestling world. I formed a wrestling school because of the lack of ability to be able to serve in the fellowship at that point in time outside my home group. I formed one of the largest wrestling schools in the country, over 600-some clients I have. You know, and I got to help participate, work with kids for a long period of time. Replaced that service, but there was still something missing where I was not giving back to addicts at that point. I was not involved with addicts that much, except my home group. And I started seeking out, and know, we did a few history conferences. You know, originally, and we did one at Weill University where Greg and everyone came to. You know, we started a newsletter called New Awakenings. We started meeting in conferences. You know, back then was in Ripley, West Virginia, called Pure Spirit Traditionalist Gatherings, which were under the as is for Narcotics Anonymous. And you know, we got involved in that area, having an annual conference going to it, trying to educate people about this, and no one could seem to say at that point in time that, you know, we should start a new service structure, that we should get involved in a new structure, that we were even allowed to. People wanted to straighten out the service structure we had. You know, and I always felt like I was, my thought ways were long ahead of where we're at this point in time, and I was really lost in the ability to tell people. I felt that I didn't feel there was any hope in changing the structure within anymore. You know, I lost that hope. And I thought we need to set up anew and start doing things differently and go back to the principles that Greg had originally brought me up with, that, you know, that we're doing something that was never done before. And I never understood what Greg was talking about. And he was talking about developing group concepts, empowering groups. You know, and that empowerment of groups was so important to me, and I thought the rest of the world was like that. When I went to the conference, I was appalled what I saw in my first conference in 84, my World Service Conference. I was appalled when I saw people voting that didn't have a conscience. And RSRs had never, ever took anything back from the conference and sent it to their groups. And they were just voting and said they were entrusted to vote. And I said, I'm only entrusted to vote the conscience of the region that I serve. I'm not entrusted to make decisions here. That's not my responsibility. My responsibility is that if you don't have time to give it to the group, it shouldn't be done. You know, and Greg was talking about this stuff called group conscience, developing the conscience for the groups, by the groups, for the addicts, through a loving, caring, compassionate God, through the second commission. You know, and I took that literally at that point in my life, and I was appalled, and I was torn apart. I really didn't know where to turn, except it brought me back to the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And the steps delivered me, and I was able to find myself and believe that the steps and traditions are our answer. Not all this other soft concepts or any other type of stuff, but it was lies within the steps and traditions. And I got more involved again. I got more excited. And, you know, I always say, God, if one door closes, God opens another door. My wrestling school closed. You know, and why? Because I trusted people literally, and I opened the door for people to be able to steal from me. And I lost my school. I mean, I'm still involved in wrestling, but not at that level. You know, and, where I produced over 100 some state champions. I produced a couple cadet national champs, junior national, pure national champs, a couple guys ranked at the Olympic level. You know, still have some guys in college that are going to the what I call the big show, the NCAA championships. You know, got some guys still in high school with you know, placing in state yet today that I trained. You know, but that was just a benefit of Narcotics Anonymous that I was able to do that. You know, I was able to get through things, trying times in my life. Like my son was one of the most upcoming athletes in the country. Was one of the, you know, ranked high. I just knocked off the national champ in his sophomore year. He beat the national champ, the number one kid in the country, and was one of the, you know, brightest, had one of the brightest future in the wrestling world. And in his 11th grade year, he got strangled at his high school. The wrestling coach had ordered him to be taken care of, and he got strangled and got knocked to a brain injury. And we had to move him out of that school district, move him to another school district. And I was scared for my son. I didn't want to handle it. The first thing I thought was, make, you know, is he on drugs? I had him drug tested. And what I did is I violated my trust with my son when I did this, but I didn't trust him at this point. I could not figure it out what was going on with him. And I had a doctor friend in the program, Narcotics Anonymous, that told me, hey, Bill, you know, he was running around me for about 6 months and said, I think your son has noxious brain injury. Bring him over to the hospital tonight. We're going to do a brain scan on him, a nuclear scan. And it comes back, he had a noxious brain injury, which he had over 10 spots in his brain that were dead, you know, size of dime to quarters. half dollar size in his brain. And his brain had to want to reroot itself, but we had to move and just, you know, we had to take on other, you know, financial bills in our life. Over $100,000 court case. You know, I had to file up by the court, get into federal court myself. You know, because I had, the lawyers wouldn't take it on, and the only thing I had to rely on was my experience I had with Grateful Dave in fighting his federal court case against the World Service Office. You know, and I knew how to walk it in there, and I knew how to get this thing into court, and there was no, there had seven different prongs you had to meet to take a, to attach a third party as an agent of a school district, and I did that. You know, I got it into federal court, the first one that sets precedent in that area, but it was because of narcotics anonymous experiences that I had that I was able to walk through that. And when everything was against me and people were trying to make us look like the bad people, I was able to rise above that and keep my head high, have my family hold their heads high while we walked through that. You know, and, like I said, I got a second mortgage, you know, because I have over $120,000 that I spent on lawyers after that. Because the court-appointed lawyers, I had to get a few lawyers, you know, and, but we walked through them trying times. You know, and, the trying times in 1987, I got injured in the steel mill. You know, and, there was no income coming in for a couple of years there because I lost my workman's comp. You know, and, I had to fight to get that back. My wife lost her job. And we went from making $100,000 in 87 for the next couple of years to having zero income. You know, and, we had to readjust ourselves. You know, and, yeah, and I think about the, all these times, and my home group was always there for me. My sponsor was always there for me. At that point, Greg was my sponsor. And I always had someone to call, and Greg used to say, what else could you, you know, Bill, you could lose everything, Bill, everything. You could lose your job, which I did, okay, through my injury. We had no income. He said, you could lose your house, you could lose your family. But you still got yourself. You're able to pull your bootstraps up because of narcotics anonymous and start over. You know, and that's what gave me hope at that point in time, that I could trust what Greg was telling me. And I could believe the things he was telling me about group conscience also, and not to deviate from it, to stay involved with it, and to help develop it. And I think that's the excitement today, that through all these trying times, that, you know, my wife and I never divorced. I brought my kids through it. They're young adults, okay, still trying to help find their way. My son's 31 years old, was wrestling for the last 10 years at the Olympic level, trying to make the Olympic team, ranked eighth in the country, you know, and, you know, played sixth in the U.S. Open National Tournament, you know, so he should have been, you know, he beat up, you know, he beat the NCAA National Champion, undefeated champion. So I got to experience things like that with my son through this process. Just because I stayed in Narcotics Anonymous when the rest of Narcotics Anonymous was saying our group was not NA. I stuck and I stayed. And I found other people like Brian, like Jim out in Ohio, that were also dissatisfied with what was going on, and start reconnecting with people that were thinking the same, in the same light, the same form, that groups should be empowered, groups should be able to have the choice to print their own literature, distribute their own literature, to be involved, to not have to be attached to that structure, and be able to set up a new structure. You know, and my life has benefited so vastly because of that. You know, I just think of the things that have happened over the years, you know, with the court case, sitting in a federal case, the World Service suing Grateful Dave, you know, and going through the whole process with Dave. I lived in my home two times for 6 months. I'm fighting up, you know, it works out. Why? Fighting up, you know, them changing our third edition revised basic text. And now, you know, the court case, you know, and playing the court case, you had no lawyer, and to into that court case, you know, and, you know, to get Bo to come out and testify on his behalf, you know, and, support him to, you know, to go through the case with him, for me to sit with him through that whole case and testify on his behalf, you know, and watch Judge Pollock, Service Warder, And the most spiritual act in my in its fellowship that ever happened to me was sitting on a in a stand and having a judge get out of his high perch and come down and sit on the actual stand and sat aside of me, served me water. You know, and you think about that, you know, you think about something like that happening, you know, and when that judge said to us, you know, that this was a fellowship issue, it shouldn't have been in this courtroom. That this thing should be settled. You know, and then there was, you know, that miracle of that judge's sanity. And this should be settled, and I want these parties to settle this. Because neither one of you is going to like what I have to do. And, you know, we were looking for what we call a limited public domain, that the fellowship had the right to their basic text and content in it, but the fellowship be able to print, as long as they weren't making profit, copy it, and not have to pull our office to get it. And the office was looking to get total ownership of it. And the only other act would have been public domain, which would have just let our book go out into the public like the Bible does instead. And neither one of us wanted that part, so Dave went out to the office, and they came up with the apology letter. They came out with the motions that were supposed to go out to the fellowship. That, you know, with the third edition revised basic text was supposed to, the book was supposed to be sent to every group in Narcotics Anonymous, and you know, and without any opinions, were supposed to be sent all the changes that were made to the book, the fourth and the fifth edition, sent to the groups, and the groups were supposed to take a group tally and come back to the conference and vote on what book they wanted. Grateful Dave had to file contempt charges against the office because they didn't live up to the agreement. We were in the court. I was with Grateful Dave and his then-up volunteer lawyer, Penance, at the court when the judge had the conference on the call, and the conference chose to rebuke the judge and basically say they're above the law. You know, they chose to throw the motions out, not even hear them, which, and then Dave died in the meantime, you know, from the AIDS virus. He died and couldn't follow through with the contempt charges. So I tried to substitute myself as a defendant in Dave's behalf, and the judge didn't allow, he would not allow present to be set in this courtroom. He said, but I want you to understand there's another case. I'd rather have you bring the case and me prosecute the office instead. And we never did that. You know, we walked away from that, the money it would have entailed, and we just felt we weren't strong enough at that point of time to go through a case like that. We had not been set up for that to happen. You know, so we walked away, and you know, we reformed as is in the mid 2000s. You know, and started working with as is for Narcotics Anonymous again, and empowering groups, getting involved in carrying the message of hope, promise, and freedom once again. You know, and I mean, I just think of all these things that happened along the way. You know, that set up the person I am today. You know, I'm grateful to 1979. Grateful to the people I walked into. That got me involved in the participatory process, got me involved learning what group consciences, learning about what the traditions are in this fellowship. I mean, just amazing stuff, you know, and that holds me today, you know. I just feel it's empowered. There's so many different ideals out there that are going to work, and the only way they're going to work, though, is through outside structure. You know, and I totally believe that. I mean, Brian and I have been talking about teleconference. I mean, it's something that's got to be developed for us yet. You know, we haven't got to that point where we haven't developed yet. Like, we're at this literature conference this weekend, and we don't have a teleconference of people that cannot attend yet. You know, and we feel we need to open the process up to get more people involved. You know, I'm still doing it the old way, you know. It's just like, going on faith, blind faith, and just getting a couple of guys together, paying for us to get here, trying to make it cheaper for us to participate, you know. But there's something about the one-on-one eye contact that happens when two addicts get together and say the literature prayer. You know, some miracles that happen in the middle of a conference when everything seems to fall apart and someone brings it back and we have a silent prayer and we say the literature prayer again and get refocused on what we're there for. You know, something happens when we're together and we're tired, we're at that point of almost breaking, and then God's allowed to talk to us again and we get to write again. You know, and that's how the book was written. You know, you think about the basic text. You know, I don't use any of the other literature except the original stuff that we wrote by addicts for addicts. I do not use anything that professionals have touched in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I was talking with an addict today about, can't think of who it was, I was talking with so many people today, but they were saying about, do we ever think we're going to get the rights for our basic text? And don't we already own them? That's a fiduciary trust. It's not ownership by the office. They may want the fellowship to believe they own it, but it was a right for hire, but it never was. And that's established in the court case with Grateful Dave with both testimony, that it was a labor of law. It was not a right for hire. You know, and you really think about that type of stuff, okay, that much love was put into a book and created a book against all odds, and that patient text was written by addicts for addicts. You know, and that's why this continuation of what we're doing, the excitement that's going on, you know, it's, since September, people, the home group I belong to has, made available through the process of getting the patient text back out for anywhere from $1.10 to $1.25 a book again. It all depends on the discounts that we can get each time we go to print, but we produced over 10,000 basic texts again. You know, that we've got into 14 different states, 3 different countries around the world. And, you know, when I go back, they're getting together another order again of at least 1,000 books that are going out. You know, these people calling up every day wanting to get involved. The girl up in Northwest Florida, okay, up in the panhandle called me before I was coming here, 25 years clean, and was so excited about being able to come to the literature conference. The first thing she asked, that's all I want to know, is this part of NAWS? I said, no, this is separate from NAWS. This is literature going to be written by addicts for addicts again. And so she's coming. She has 25 years clean, and she's excited that she can get involved again. You know, and there are more and more people coming out of the woodwork down in Texas. I mean, we've sent 300 books down there in the last month. And there's, you know, going back, there's 200 more books going there. You know, and we sent books into Oklahoma for the first time. Kentucky, they've got over 1,000 books. You know, in Missouri, they got over 1,000 books already. You know, we got books in Hawaii, California. You know, and, just people coming together and calling one another the way we were taught in the early days. Get on the phone and talk to people. Reach out, touch someone else's life, and share the hope again. Share the principles that we've been taught. And that's what's exciting me today, is them principles that we've been taught over the years. You know, and there's more. I mean, I got a renewed life in me once again. I'm renewed. I'm putting together archives. You know, scheduled to go November 8th to Texas, down to the Fort Worth area, and do a history day down there. Just got back to Missouri, where I went out and got to participate in a history day there. One of my sponsors, one of my grand sponsors, we rented a car and went to Missouri. You know, and spent the weekend out there, and we got to do a history day, a whole history day in the middle of a convention. You know, and four addicts were informed. Just getting to share the way we used to. Like when I met Jim Nichols up in Milwaukee, I actually met him in Miami at WCNA 11, and then I re-met him up in Milwaukee, okay, at the World Convention, page 2. You know, and got to spend a whole night there with Jim and talk with him, and he just died this past year, and he had become my sponsor in the last year and a half there. You know, he just died of cancer. Just to see his change again, you know, and him talking about the things, getting involved in a history day with us in Philadelphia, and then sharing about, you know, the original time they changed our basic text originally and changed our fourth and ninth tradition with that group approval. And he said, you know, if we had to do it over again, do what we had, he said, I would never vote to become changes as a trustee. And he said, you know, the whole board did vote to change that fourth and ninth tradition, he said. They said it was unanimous, you know, of the ones that voted. And he said, you can't just blame Jimmy. He said, yes, Jimmy's the one that took the heat for it. He said, but the board voted for it. The chairperson of the board of directors voted for it. The chairman of the conference voted for it. And Jimmy voted for it. Okay? So he said it was a group of us that voted for them changes. He said, if I'd known then what I know today, he says, I would have.
Well, folks, Billy doesn't like us again. Well, folks, Billy doesn't like us again. Fell off the end of another earth way down there in the flatlands. He'll be back. Y'all sit tight. Well, here we are again. I don't know what's going on, folks. Maybe we'll, when he comes back on, we'll just end it with the questions and answers or something. Guess I'll have to edit this one, won't I? Well, what we can do, folks, is shut this down and let we'll call Billy back at another time. is probably the best thing to do. You've been taken off a lecture, so you can come back on.